Welcome to Making America Strong Again, the only program dedicated to inspire you and to inspire a nation with stories of American exceptionalism and national restoration. Join fellow patriots as we rediscover our past, reignite our future, and celebrate America now.
Welcome to Making America Strong Again. This is Steve Olds. It's my privilege to welcome you today to our program. And it's an exciting time because we have a guest with us today who has traveled a long way to be with us in studio. Joe McCrate is in town from Switzerland. And for those of you that have not met Joe, he is a longtime native of Florida. But actually, in full disclosure, we met 33 years ago when we were going to college together at the University of Maryland. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I appreciate you taking that special trip from Switzerland to be with us. Some people will go a long way to join a program, and Joe's certainly making that show appear for us today, so we appreciate that. And actually, it's great to have you with us. We've spent a lot of time together over the years. Joe and I actually served in the Air Force together for quite a while. We went through ROTC together at the University of Maryland. We've worked in a number of different activities together, and our kids have grown up together and all those sorts of things. But today our focus is really about understanding America's perspective from overseas. And Joe, you tell us a little bit about your background, obviously the service and so forth. Where did you go from the time we met at Maryland 33 years ago and realize this is only a 30-minute show?
So... As you know, I spent about 4 years during the Iraq War and as an intelligence officer based overseas in my early 20s, and then came back, and after the drawdown, after the Berlin Wall came down, I got into the sales field of stocks and bonds and worked for Morgan Stanley for a while. And then we hooked up again in some entrepreneurial pursuits down here in Florida, which took me out of the D.C. area, which I came back to after the military. Came down here in the late 90s. And then before too long, the opportunity came up to move into to take some of the sales expertise I had and apply those to the pharmaceutical field. And so I've been working for an international pharmaceutical company, the same one, for 17 years now, and it's been quite a journey. And one of my particular goals was to get back over to Europe. I really enjoyed it as a young officer in the military in my early 20s and wanted to go back and have that experience again. So a lot of my career was focused on international business and getting over there to take the family over and have that experience later in life. So we've been living overseas in Switzerland. We've actually been living overseas for 9 years, of which seven has been in Switzerland, two were in the Philippines.
So you've been all over the place, and we're going to drill down into the business experience you've had, but I'd like to touch on your educational background as well, because oftentimes, especially in the entrepreneurial discussions we have, a lot of people ask us about higher education, whether it's helpful, where it makes sense, when it doesn't. Tell us a little bit about your higher education pursuits.
So, it's been quite a journey, and I couldn't have predicted what education I would have had coming out of University of Maryland. Actually, I went to University of Maryland to get an engineering degree, and when I thought I was going to get a pilot slot, got a government and politics degree, but unfortunately, I'm partially colorblind, so I became an intelligence officer.
I hate it when that happens.
It tended to ruin my day when I found out about that. So in order to excel in that career field, I got picked up a Master's of Science in International Relations and held on to that. And then when I left the military and got into the business sector and really wanted to explore working overseas, I pursued a doctorate from a school in Sarasota called Argosy University, a doctorate in international business with a special focus on international marketing. So I completed my doctorate several years ago, and it's a DBA, so a doctorate of business administration.
So right now, unfortunately, even though Joe and I have known each other a long time, I'm now required to call him Dr. McCrate. So hopefully we'll get through the rest of the program without any faux pas. The reason I ask the question, though, Joe, is that there's so many people right now that are looking to make an edge in the business pursuit that they have and being able to distinguish themselves. That's an important element. What have you found in the corporate world? Has the education helped? Was it a square filler? What was your experience?
certainly any education that you can bring to the table will help. It'll be applicable in some way, shape, or form. It may not be a direct applicability to your current position, but in the interactions that you have in the different jobs that you do, you will be able to apply some of it. But I think more than just the formal education is also the experiences that you have, the military discipline, the military focus, getting a mission done, sense of urgency. That all is well appreciated in the corporate world and has served me well to move up the ladder from sales rep to leading a brand now.
So let's talk about what it's like actually living and working overseas. A lot of folks that have perhaps never served in the military or served in a large corporate organization where they've been tasked to live outside the country don't have that perspective. What's it like to live, first of all, as an American, just overseas? What's it like?
Certainly. It's a large topic to get your arms around because there's so many different facets of living overseas. I would characterize it as its trade-offs. It is an adventure. It is a priceless opportunity for myself, for my family, to experience different culture, especially not just a Western culture, but when we had our 2 years in the Philippines, that was a very eye-opening experience. You really come to appreciate what we have here in America. You really come to appreciate what makes this country great. But the trade-offs are fantastic experiences, the appreciation of cultures and the other perspectives. And when you come back to the U.S. and you talk with people, your perspective is it's so much widened after you've been experiencing these other cultures and working with people from different nationalities day by day. So I work for a German boss, but on my team, I have a person from Greece, France, Sweden, and Taiwan. So
all on one team.
All on one team. And that's a team that we work on a drug for macular degeneration and diabetic macular edema. It's for the eye. And so we collaborate and the cultures, it's there, but it's, we're a common team and you get the best out of people when you have a full integrated team coming from different perspectives.
So this may sound like a funny question, but does everybody speak English or is that – what's the common language for the company?
So the company I work for is based in Switzerland and the corporate language is English and I think that makes things a lot easier. Now, when I first got there, this is 9 years ago, things were a little bit more, I should say, dramatic. So the copiers were in German and I was getting emails from my assistant in German and it made things a little bit challenging at first. But over the time, as more and more people, English becomes even more greatly exposed across the world. English is easily done. And I think that's one of the criteria to come to the global headquarters is you have to have a good understanding of English in both written and speaking.
So when you look at your experience there in the corporate world, and you mentioned that you've been in Asia as well, what are some of the things that you've experienced working with international business people? What is their perspective of working with you as an American?
I think there's some and I'll be quite honest. I think there's probably some bias there. I would say that they may see Americans as hard-charging, maybe go-getters, people that seize the opportunity. Certainly not – they see, I guess, more drivers than they see us as supporters. And so I'm very conscious of that. And over time, you really appreciate other people's opinions and their perspective. So, you get up in front of a crowd and you deliver a presentation and someone says, man, Americans are such good public speakers. and I say, well, actually, that's the most fearful thing for most people across the world. So it's not an American skill. But there's a lot of things that are characterized as American. And so I'd say that there are some stereotypes that we have. I live in Basel, and Basel is a city that's a third of expats. So about 33% are expats, but only 6% are U.S. citizens. And so certainly a minority there, and in my company, it's probably even less, probably about 2%.
What is an expat, just for definition?
Certainly. An expat would be someone that's living outside of the country that they're a citizen of. And so so there's not that many Americans there. So it's, you know, it's not a it's certainly not a detriment. And I'm very careful not to, you know, what's kind of crazy is you would imagine that there's a standard no religion, no politics at work. And it is amazing how people that, you know, I really closely abide by that, but it's amazing how people actually have their opinions of our politics there. So these were politics that, you know, during George W. Bush's years and then now during Barack Obama's years, and everybody seems to have an opinion. And so I'm very careful to take on the opinion, and I typically don't engage with it because it's probably not productive.
Well, it's one of the things that's interesting to me is when you start looking at dealing with people, especially in the corporate environment, that's a little different than the entrepreneurial world. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you've got a perspective of what it's like dealing with Americans. How do you think – we talked about how they work with you individually. How does the international community view American business right now? We've got a couple minutes before the break. How do they see it kind of in the big picture? And then when we come back, we'll drill down into more specifics.
Well, there's no doubt that, you know, even in the industry that I work in, U.S. industry, U.S. intellect, U.S. innovation is very much appreciated. And a lot of the great ideas that fuel, and I won't say all, but I will say people recognize there's a lot of good innovation that comes out of the U.S. And so we always try to tap into that and try to take those learnings and expand them across the world. And so the U.S. is very much well-respected.
Yeah. So when you work with folks, do you work on a particular – do you pull an international team together? Do you work in a certain geographic region? How do the different countries kind of work together?
So it's it really depends upon the project. Sometimes we work as a cross-functional team comprised of medical people and regulatory people and marketing people. But we also work across boundaries, like you said. So I used to work in a job where my – area of responsibility was Africa, Asia, and Middle East. And so that was a diverse population there.
I bet it was.
Just even where we were going to have the meetings to bring everybody together was sometimes an area of discussion and compromise. But now I work at the global level. This is the second time I've been working at the global level. And I think you take things from a universal perspective there. And you try to find a common good for everyone. And not certainly in the business world, you can't find a cookie cutter solution for every situation, but you find what's called a best practice that can be adapted, can be modified. We have a very decentralized structure, so what we say at Global isn't necessarily mandated verbatim across the world. It's localized. It's put into play that so the countries that implement the ideas and the strategies that we have customize it for what's best for both the patients and for the business.
So it's a pretty interesting way to go about moving from the U.S. to an international market. So when we come back from the break, we'll talk more specifically about the elements of working for entrepreneurs and how it is that we take that to another level, especially in the international market. Okay. We'll be right back.
Making America Strong Again is brought to you by Patriot Mission. To learn more about National Restoration, get free resources at www.makingamericastrongagain.com.
This is Steve Schwartz with PDGo.com. We've been in business for over 15 years and have created over 1,000 websites for clients across the USA and across the world. We help our clients have a custom, affordable website, and we teach them personally how they can very easily update the information on their websites themselves anytime they want to without being a techie. Take a look at pdgo.com and see samples of our work and testimonials that clients have said about our service. pdgo.com. Again, pdgo.com.
At Surf Pro of Vero Beach, no job is too big and no question is too small. So when fire, water, or mold damage strikes your home or business, call on ServPro of Vero Beach at 772-770-0501. That's where you'll find a team of specialists that's faster to any size disaster. So when the things that matter most are on the line, make sure ServPro of Vero Beach is too by calling 772-770-0501. That's ServPro of Vero Beach, helping make fire, water, and mold damage like it never, ever happened. Franchises are independently owned and operated.
Hi, this is Kelly Fisher, a supporter of the Making America Strong Again mission and your local real estate professional here on the Treasure Coast. It has been my honor to serve our community here in Vero Beach since 2003. And with over 1,500 home sales over the past 21 years, it's my hope that you will consider the Kelly Fisher team at Treasure Coast Sotheby's International Realty for all your real estate needs. It's also our desire that every family has a home and every home has a family. And we have partnered with the Homeless Family Center of Vero Beach to work toward that goal. When you buy or sell a home with the Kelly Fisher team, we will make a substantial contribution toward alleviating homelessness in our hometown. To be a part of this great mission, please call us at 772-321-6905.
Welcome back to Making America Strong Again, the program dedicated to inspire you and to inspire a nation with stories of American exceptionalism and national restoration. Once again, here's your host, Steve Olds.
Well, thanks for being with us again today. And as we said in our earlier segment, our guest is Joe McCrate from Basel, Switzerland. Joe and I have known each other for, going over 3 decades now. And Joe, it's great to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You bet. One of the things we were talking about, since Joe is an international guy, works for a large corporation internationally, and sometimes understanding how to operate in the international community is one thing. A couple things I'd like to touch on before we wrap up the show today is the activity that you apply as a corporate guy. Sometimes we talk a lot about entrepreneurship here on this program. How do you apply entrepreneurial skills? Because you've been both. You've been an entrepreneur. You've started companies and worked mm-hmm. in small businesses, but now you find yourself a very senior leader in a large global company. How do you apply those skills and where do they fit?
Well, I think it's different. It's just the entrepreneurial thinking that you apply within the structure of the corporation. So while most all of the focus is to drive the success of the brands that that we work with so they can better serve the patients, there is certainly the entrepreneurial things that we look at is what types of innovation, what will address an unmet need that's out there. It's finding that need. And we do a lot of market research to find out, you know, is there something out there to help patients stay on the drug? Is there side effects that we need to address? Is there different patient types that are not getting served with this drug right now? So we're always entrepreneurial, and we, instead of looking for new market segments, we're looking for new patient segments, which our drugs can better serve the different patients out there within the label of the drug. But certainly we want to make the drugs not only – they're already effective and efficacious, but we want to make them – the access to the drugs better. We want to make the delivery of the drugs and the compliance a lot easier. So that's a mindset that the team always has to continuous improvement.
So it's the thinking. You're able to apply the thinking.
Right.
And that's probably one of the reasons that you were able to move into different sections, because you've moved in lots of different jobs in a large company and you've worked in different countries. And
So actually we get evaluated. There's a term called agility. What kind of agility does this person have? Not only we get measured in a matrix, kind of a performance compared to different jobs. So they look at people's agility, learning agility to take on new jobs, new tasks, and that's how they determine whether should this person stay in the same type career field or could we give them a stretch assignment. So agility thinking and agility learning is very, very key.
So for people that may be in an entrepreneurial pursuit and are being frustrated because a business isn't profitable, there's not a reason that they should say, you know what, I don't want to go in the corporate world. Sometimes it makes sense to go in the corporate world. You can grow your skills. You got access to a lot of resources. You can always come back into the entrepreneurial world as well, right?
That's right. I mean, it is amazing. We see, you know, doctors that have their own practices. They get tired of it for a while. So they come into the pharmaceutical industry for a while to do research, to explore different areas, to just kind of scratch that itch that they have professionally. And then they go back out into the practices. And I think entrepreneurs can do that too. I mean, if you're a seasoned veteran in something, you can go out and step away for a while and try your own entrepreneurial pursuit. And if it doesn't work out, you can go back to the type of experience and go back in. Now, if you're climbing the corporate ladder, candidly, you may lose some speed in going up the corporate ladder if you step away. But if you judge that what's important for you is a better work-life balance, more priorities around spending time with your family and creating something for yourself and to pass along, then I firmly encourage that.
Let me ask you this, switch topics a little bit. There are always things that happen in the United States that have an impact around the globe. How do those events, activities, conversations, how does that manifest itself from your perspective overseas?
Well, Steve, as you can imagine, with the primaries ongoing and the presidential race,
there's nothing to talk about there, I'm sure.
Exactly. So that is always a we don't have a water cooler, but if we had a water cooler, that would be the water cooler conversation. And while CNN does a nice job of dissemination of information, it is sometimes a shame that is people's perception of the U.S., people's perception of candidates or people in the U.S. is characterized by what CNN and the CNN commentators say. So quite often my wife and I don't necessarily agree with what they're saying, and we get aggravated and turn the station off or just listen to music or something, because it's unfortunate, because if something's said on CNN, that is typically taken for fact. And it would be great to have some other competing news organizations out there that maybe were more fair and balanced.
So across Europe and obviously Southwest Asia or Southeast Asia where you were, that's pretty common because of the airports and all the main distribution networks.
Exactly. It's on every cable network. It's
hotels.
In every hotels. Yeah. So you have CNN, you have BBC, and that's particularly the only ones. And so if, you know, you can imagine there's a lot of liberal type information mm-hmm. that has a liberal stance on it or stamp on it. So, you know, at times that doesn't quite jive with what our beliefs are. And most of the time at the office, I will let it ride unless it's an important issue, and then I will engage the person in a very professional manner and kind of give them my perspective so they have another perspective to take into account.
So one of the things that I also know about you is that you love traveling, you love having a good time and going to different places around the world. Tell us a little about some of the fun adventures that you've had.
So we have been blessed living over there, and my wife and I, we've been married for 11 years now, and we always try to take an anniversary trip somewhere unique and as fantastic as we can think of. So we've been everywhere. When we lived out in the Philippines, we made a big emphasis on going down to Australia and going to Bali and up to Hong Kong, and that was great. And then being in Switzerland, you're right at the center of Europe. So we've gone to Monte Carlo, and certainly Paris is only a quick 3-hour train ride away that you and I even enjoyed when
That's
you guys
right.
came
that was
to visit.
Fun.
We love Spain, and last for our 10th anniversary, we went to Maldives. So it's very nice, as you can imagine. It's a lot easier and quicker to get to some of these fantastic destinations. And then for this year's anniversary, we plan to go to the Canary Islands.
The Canary Islands. So yeah. we need dates and hotel information
exactly.
And where we book our tickets.
You are more than always welcome to come with us.
To invade your personal space on the anniversary.
Exactly. Well, you're Uncle Steve to our two young daughters. So Uncle Steve and Aunt Nancy were always invited to come along.
Well, that's cool. We'll see if Mike's available, and we'll schedule the trip.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. If you were to talk to somebody who'd never traveled to Europe mm-hmm. and young Americans, perhaps some of our young entrepreneurial apprentices say, hey, before I get married and get deep into my business, I'm going to take a trip. Where would you recommend they start?
So what I've done this three times, and I think one of the best ways to experience Europe is to buy a Eurorail ticket, a 2-week Eurorail ticket, and buy yourself a nice backpack and go see all the major cities. So when I say Eurorail ticket, that's a ticket that you can ride unlimited amount for 2 weeks on the rail system. And the rail system there is just brilliant. It's really nice. So I would say land in Paris and do Paris, go down to Florence, go to Rome, go to Venice, go to Prague, go to Budapest. London's probably a separate trip because it's a little bit far away, but hit all the major cities and see the sights that you see in the travel magazines. I mean, when you're there live, it just doesn't – I mean, when you're – as you know from going to the top of the Eiffel Tower where I was able to propose to my lovely wife, there's nothing like it. And so going to the Spanish Fountain in Rome, it's breathtaking. And there's two places that my wife actually cried when she was there. It was seeing the Colosseum in Rome at nighttime and seeing the St. Charles Bridge in Prague at nighttime. And they're breathtaking places, and I encourage everybody to go over there. But if someone young and enjoys kind of an adventure, I take the 2 week Eurorail for sure.
Now, you've also spent obviously a lot of time in Asia. Mm-hmm. Where are the highlights there?
So, depending upon what you're looking for, Hong Kong was really spectacular, and so was the Sydney Opera House. That was great, but there's plenty of beaches there. There's plenty of Tokyo is just that is the Asia New York. Love that. And
that's a pretty busy place, yeah, though, isn't it?
Yeah, slightly. Exactly. And Singapore is actually – that's the kind of the hub that you can get to a lot of places very quickly. Bali's only about an hour and a half out of Singapore. So yeah, there's a lot of different places there. It depends upon whether you want beach or you want exploration. I mean, Thailand is absolutely awesome too, because you've got everything from elephant safaris to lying on a nice beach or getting a great massage.
You know, I've not been on an elephant safari this week, so that may be something we had to put on the agenda.
Let's block it right now on the calendar.
We could do that. So one of the questions that comes up a lot, and obviously with the terrorism threats, people are really concerned about what's going on out there. What are your recommendations for playing it smart and how to take care of business while you're traveling?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that, because I was actually wanted to bring that up. And when I was in the Air Force working overseas, We didn't wear our uniforms off base, and we came to the base and changed into our uniforms, and that's kind of stuck with me, that I'm very, very proud to be an American, but I also have common sense not to be waving the American flag from the balcony and having the flag posted outside outside of my apartment. And it's common sense, because Europe is, while it seems big, it is a small place, and there's a lot of transient people through there. And people have very strong opinions, and we see people hanging German flags and Swiss flags and Spanish flags, but we don't hang the American flag, and it's because in this day and age, America is polarizing. I mean, it people love America, and there's people out there that don't think so favorably about it. So I keep my family safe by being a good international resident there.
Kind of keeping a low profile.
Keeping a low profile. There's no reason to be boisterous and being loudmouthed. And you can – sometimes we're in a restaurant and you can tell when there's visitors from out of town and they're talking with loud voices, and we're thinking, man.
Have you seen much of the refugee crisis?
You know, Switzerland is very strong with its borders. And
we could learn something from that.
You know, they're very strong with their borders, and we've had things that have happened about only I was going to give you kilometers, but that doesn't really resonate with this audience. So probably about 2 miles outside of the border where we live, which would be about 4 miles from our house, there was a young girl attacked by who they've identified was some people from the Middle East that were coming that were refugees, and they were supposed refugees. But we've had a lot of problems in Germany, and I say we because being a European resident right now up in Cologne, and we're very cognizant that there's people coming through, and we have to play it smart, because the world can be a dangerous place.
Well, Joe, I appreciate your insight, and thanks for sharing all the perspective from the international market, and it's exciting to look at all the opportunities out there. Maybe we'll have you back and talk about pursuing opportunities around the world. So thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Making America Strong Again is brought to you by Patriot Mission. To learn more about national restoration, get free resources at www.makingamericastrongagain.com.